Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Hey, Nini, hey, Nini, Kadaligi.
Doesn't that sound nice? That is Tommy Sands' Irish lullaby, A Nee Nee. Does it make you want to sleep? Can you sleep? Between disturbing daily news, economic anxiety, inflation, an ongoing pandemic, life? There is a lot to keep us up at night. According to the National Institutes of Health, Heart, Lung, and Blood, between 50 and 70 million Americans have sleep disorders, and one in three adults do not get the recommended amount of uninterrupted sleep. I think I probably don't. Today on Be Well, where we focus on our wellness, sleep. How to get more of it, how to get better at it, what to do when you can't. Dr. Robert Thomas joins us here in Studio 2. Dr. Thomas is an associate professor in the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School and a specialist in sleep medicine and pulmonary disease at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Dr. Thomas, thank you.
Welcome.
Great to have you. So we're told as we grow up, 8 hours, right? Every once in a while I hear seven, but really I hear 8 hours. It's a magic number. Is that true?
Not really. 7 hours is the official statement by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine for the average adult. But there is no exact number. Some need less, some need a little bit more. And of course, there's a very large difference across life. When you're newborn, you need, or you sleep about 18 hours. Teenagers need clearly more than 7 hours. You know, if you're age 90 and you're targeting 7 hours, it could be a little bit difficult. But seven is a working number. It's a bit like a body mass index. You know, less than 25 is, you know, a good number. But if you're a person working out in the gym and putting on a lot of muscle, you know, your body mass index can be higher than 25 and you may be actually very healthy.
So how does one know one's own sleep needs? How do I figure out for me, as me, what my number is?
Yeah, so across a lifetime, it is usually evident to any average person in what I would call neutral conditions, how much they would sleep.
So just how much your body just does it. So if you could go to bed when you were tired, wake up when you wake up, you would normalize around a number that's the right number for your body?
Pretty much, you know, you have to clear out any excessive sleep debt. So if you've done a lot of shift work and now you're catching up, that's a little different. But you ask almost anybody how long they think they can sleep, what's their natural sleep, they'll be fairly accurate. It'll be unusual for someone to say, I have no idea how much sleep I need, you know, individually.
So we hear a lot about this concept called sleep hygiene. So tell me, what is sleep hygiene and what are the basic practices?
It's a terrible term because it sounds like it's not a serious thing. But sleep hygiene is a set of behaviors which if you deviate from, you put your sleep system at stress. So, you know, having a steady wake-up time, being in darkness when you're sleeping and 2 or 3 hours prior to that, you want to avoid bright light.
Before you go to bed, you should not be in a brightly lit room for a couple of hours?
Bad idea. All of us need a biological evening. That's when our melatonin levels, in fact, rise. So as a working rule, I tell my patients, you know, after 8 o'clock, turn the lights down. Give your eyes a little bit of dark adaptation, you can kind of get by.
So we had a, actually, I, because you brought up this melatonin, I'm gonna pause you for a second. We reached out to our texting group, and if you'd like to join listeners, you can join our texting group by texting the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's Boston to 617-766-0382. And Joyce from East Falmouth said, I was awake until 4 a.m. the other night, up by 7. Last night I took a melatonin. Believe it or not, I think my sleep is affected by the cycles of the moon. I read before I go to bed. I read before I go to bed, so no screen. I'm still tired when I get up, though. End quote. So, what is she doing wrong in this sleep hygiene? And can cycles of like light and dark and when the sun comes up and goes down, when the moon is up, affect how we sleep?
Oh, definitely. You know, the kind of winter and summer difference in light which we have in the northeast, northwest, clearly can affect sleep. All of us tend to wake up slightly earlier in summer and sleep a little bit later in winter if, you know, we don't use alarms as an example. If a person wakes up, you know, substantially earlier than desirable, consistently, either they are, you know, extreme morning larks, which is a, you know, kind of natural extreme of the population.
But that's a nice way to talk about it, a morning lark.
Yeah. Or they have potentially a sleep disorder or a disorder like anxiety, which is causing awakenings early. It'd be uncommon for a person to just suddenly start waking up very early without a good reason. Either they've always been a morning type or something is afoot, and melatonin usually will not solve that. In fact, if you take melatonin at bedtime to try to wake up later, it doesn't work. It actually makes you wake up earlier. Melatonin is just darkness. So if you get extra darkness before you go to bed, you'll actually wake up earlier. So a person getting up too early, taking melatonin at bedtime, is the exact opposite of what he or she should be doing.
So I'm going to play two pieces of sound for you, and I'll do sort of the first half of each of these. So here is snoring. Okay, but now here is what's called sleep apnea. Now, we have, I feel like I'm suffocating just listening to that. You know, we have a public running understanding that at a certain age, people will begin to maybe snore. Is that a problem, other than if you're sleeping next to someone who's snoring, in terms of getting enough sleep? And what is the difference between that first thing we heard, which is snoring, and that second thing we heard, which is called sleep apnea?
So everybody has a somewhat narrower airway while sleeping because the muscles do relax. And vibrations generated from that narrowing is probably universal. When they reach a certain frequency and a certain intensity, it becomes audible snoring. And snoring just means that your airway is narrow. It's like a bit of a trumpet kind of effect. And it's incredibly common. It's especially common in areas of the world where people are smaller, like Asia as an example. You know, snoring is so common that, you know, we just kind of live with it. Now, snoring also obviously reflects a narrow airway, and if the narrowing is enough, that now there are biological consequences, like a drop in oxygen or the need to keep waking up and such, then snoring also gets more fractionated, like what you heard in that recording.
With that sleep apnea recording.
And that starts becoming, you know, into the area which we call sleep apnea, of which there is a tremendous range in severity and patterns and so on.
And that's basically a cutting off of the breath that can disrupt sleep, yes?
Sleep apnea will disrupt sleep, basically.
All right. So I want to play another sound for you here. And listeners, this is jarring. Alarm clock. Will it affect your sleep and the quality of your sleep if that's how you wake up in the morning? Or is it okay to wake up to blah, blah, blah in the mornings?
You know, typically when we wake up in the morning, we don't have a choice that, you know, we have to wake up at a certain time. Right? And if you have an abrupt awakening, it's usually unpleasant. And actually, if you have an abrupt awakening, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. Not sure I would call it dangerous, but it's probably not a desirable thing. I mean, you can't come in late for work saying that I was waiting for my natural sleep cycle to be over. You're going to get fired if you do that. So it is best that, you know, one has a steady wake-up time and give adequate time for sleep. So the likelihood that you're in deep sleep early in the morning is minor. And waking from REM sleep is usually cleaner in the sense that you wake up a little sharper. You're not, groggy and half drunk. Otherwise, if you wake up from deep sleep, you have what's called sleep inertia, where there is essentially you're in a brain fog. You're not fully awake. Your cognition is, you know, not great at that time. Your attention is poor. But it usually dissipates over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes. you know, when you're brushing your teeth, you're kind of waking up, basically. But if you wake up from deep sleep and you're answering the phone, you know, you may say something stupid or not remember what you actually said.
Because you're not really fully awake.
You're not fully awake. Not really fully awake.
All right. So we've got about room for one sentence. Single best sleep practice.
Steady, regular wake-up time is probably the single best thing. That goes without saying that you do need to give adequate sleep time. So you can't go to bed at 2 and get up at 6 every morning and say,
but I did what Dr. Thomas said.
Exactly.
All right. Dr. Robert Thomas is an associate professor in the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School and a specialist in sleep medicine and pulmonary disease at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Thanks, Dr. Thomas.
Thank you.